This is a Pinball News production.
Hi, I'm Clay Harrell, and today, I don't know, how many people went to the Northwest show in Seattle? So a lot of people. Okay, when we were at the Northwest show, we had I did a presentation on repairing and restoring the mechanical aspects of a Gottlieb Hotshots. And this is kind of a continuation of that. There's maybe a little overlap between the two seminars, but not much. But from here, we're going to talk about playfield touch-ups, opposed to doing mechanical restoration. We're going to talk about playfield touch-up. Okay, so just some general comments. And I said this at the Seattle show, and I'll say it again here, that if you're into pinball and you want games, now's the time to buy. If you've got money in your pocket, that is, the economy being down, at least where I live in the Midwest, I'm finding games to be extremely economical. A lot of the good classic drop target EMs from the 70s, those pins are like totally available for $200 to $500 without even trying hard. I mean, looking on, heck, even on eBay, they're going cheap. And the Williams stuff and even the Bally stuff, even like the Bally, like Captain Fantastics and Wizards that were selling for, you know, pushing $2,000 a year or two ago, they're half of that or maybe even a third of that now. So, you know, if you've got some pocket money and you want games, I really suggest you buy now because, you know, the economic indicators seem to indicate that, you know, 2010 things are going to be sliding back up, you know, not so much pinball prices, but just the economy. And as that happens, demand for the machines will probably return and then the prices will follow. So, you know, there isn't an infinite supply of this stuff. Now's the time to buy. That's just, you know, I'm just kind of setting you up here, you know, for this. I don't know. Maybe it's worse than that. Maybe I'm just, you know, trying to rationalize what I'm doing, which is kind of sick. But okay, so you got a game. So now you got to restore it. So you got game. Okay. All right. So we're going to talk about restoring the playfield. Practice makes perfect. Touching up playfields, it's not an easy thing. Matter of fact, it may be a lot more. It may be the most difficult thing you end up having to do, in regards to a game. Maybe you don't care. Maybe you don't really care how the game looks. You just want a game that plays good. That's fine. You know, there's obviously no sin involved with that. But most people want their games to look as good as they can. And the one thing, you know, you can buy new plastics, you can buy, you know, new rubbers, you can buy new parts and put them on. But the one thing you really can't buy is playfields. So what you can even buy new backlashes for the most part. They're reissuing most of these games backlashes. So, you know, you're kind of stuck with the playfields you have. You can look for better examples, but then you find yourself constantly trading up and spending a lot more money and energy doing that. My suggestion is you just buy a game, live with it, and make it into what you want. So the one thing about touching up playfields is once you figure out like what Gottlieb used for colors during the 70s on one particular game, a lot of that translates to other games. And that applies to Williams, too, because they used the specific art houses. They didn't do all the artwork in-house. What they did is they basically went out to, you know, advertising posters or whoever, where the artists actually worked from. And these guys, because they're production artists, they tend to use the same colors over and over and over. You know, it's like a Pantone color chart, which is like when you go to Home Depot and you see all those little chips of colors on the wall. Well, they basically did the same thing with Pantone inks, which was the inks that they used to silkscreen both the graphics on the playfield and the backlash. So once you get a little practice under your belt and get colors to match, that information translates to other games. And sooner or later, you'll find that you have a whole catalog of colors and techniques to reproduce those colors to make your games look really good. So what I do is I go to Michael's, and there's actually a Michael's not too far from here, I noticed, right over the other side of the highway. And I go into their acrylic paint sections, and they sell these like little bottles like you see on the screen, and they're like a buck a bottle. And I've bought every color that this one particular company, Americana, sells, and probably a zillion other colors from other companies too. So I've probably got 200-300 different colors that I've bought. And if you think about it, that's $200-$300 worth of paint. But in the big picture, that's really not a lot of money to spend if you were going to send your playfield out to HSA or, you know, one of these playfield renovations or, you know, or whoever to have your playfield done, it would probably end up costing you $400 or $500. So if you've got all these colors kind of in your back pocket, you know, you can, you know, give a man a fish or you can teach a man to fish type thinking. Well, I'm just buying a lot of lures, if you want to look at it that way. So I tend to buy a lot of colors. For brushes, I just use inexpensive brushes. I don't use an airbrush. Some guys do. Some guys are real good with it. I just never really learned that. It's definitely something you have to practice. Airbrushes are great for painting large areas. They're not so good for painting small, detailed areas, at least not in my opinion, though I'm sure there are some people that can do that. I think that it would require a great amount of skill, and I'm really looking to acquire as few skills as possible at this point in my life because it's becoming overwhelming. Okay, so like you've got to strip the playfield before you can do any topside paint work, so that means you got to make everything on the top of the playfield disappear. You know, anything that sticks through, like these switch activators, you know, they stick through the top side of the playfield. The slingshot kicker arms, they stick through the stand-up targets. All that stuff's got to come out. So you got to take all the screws out and pull it down. And on the activators, I can just kind of, I'm not really bending the arms, but I'm kind of hooking them around in a slightly different position. So, you know, it only takes a second to do it so that they're out of the way. And they'll stay like that until I hook them back. You know, you just got to get everything off the top of the playfield, roto targets, anything that's up there, you got to make disappear. So all you have is a nice flat surface. So if you ran like a board across the top, it wouldn't hit anything. You got to remove the little wood side rails, which is real easy. It's just a bunch of screws and all that stuff comes off. If you don't remember where everything's going to go or you don't think you're going to remember, you know, take some digital pictures. You know, it's a good technology to use because it's cheap and inexpensive. You just hit delete when you're all finished. You know, so, you know, that's the ticket. Okay, clean the top side of the playfield. You got to get all the dirt off. You see, like, this game down here in this picture, this jet spin, you know, everything's off. I don't have anything sticking up. You know, like, the roto target is not there. All the metal shields, all the plastic guides, and all the lane dividers, and everything's, you know, basically out of the way. And then I attack it with Magic Eraser and some Isopro alcohol. You know, I'm using 70% here. You can use any percentage you want. You know, some people say you should use 90%. The percent that isn't the high percent is obviously water. So 70% alcohol means, you know, by definition that it's 30% water. I don't think water is such a huge deal, but it's probably better to use a higher percent alcohol if you can get it. Just today, it seems like it's harder to get like a 90 or 95%. But you can find them. They're not that hard. I don't generally sand these playfields with 600 grit, you know, these old school lacquer playfields. If you're doing a diamond plate playfield, you know, stuff from the 90s, you're touching those up, you do have to sand those with 600 to increase the surface area. What it's doing is, instead of having a completely smooth surface, it's adding a bunch of little microscopic bumps to it, which increases the surface area, which allows the new finish to bite more. Well, the thing is, when you're painting over on top of a lacquer field, the urethane is going to chemically react with the lacquer and they're going to bind. Where if you're painting auto urethane over old auto urethane, they don't chemically bind. It's a mechanical bind. So that's why you have to increase the surface area with a little sandpaper on like a diamond plate playfield, but it's not really required on these lacquer. And Magic Eraser to some extent is in a way sandpaper. I would say it's about 3000 grit if I was going to guess. Now, the next thing you got to do is pick your colors. You can go to eBay and buy one of these Pantone color guides. They make a bunch of different ones. I like the solid to process guide, but it doesn't really matter. You just need something that's a bunch of colors. Because what I will do is if I need a color, I will get an approximate match on my Pantone color guide, and then I'll take the Pantone color guide to Michael's and pick out, you know, colors that are similar to that. This beats the hell out of walking into Michael's with an old playfield strapped to your back. Though you could certainly do it, but it seems really inconvenient. I would say, you know, when you're there at a dollar bottle, I would buy every color in the world that's close to the color you're looking for, because you don't really know once you get home how it's going to look exactly, and running back and forth to the store is just a waste of time and energy. And also, when the acrylic paints dry, they dry darker than when you apply them. So there's a little bit of guesswork involved in doing this whole process. So, you know, having a lot of colors on hand is a good thing, and a buck a shot, it's not much of a waste of money. Okay, so now this is where I start. I get colors that are approximate match. I try and do the best I can. Like here I'm doing, even though I have black in the picture, I'm not really doing black. I'm concentrating on the green and the blue. And you can see like the blue is sitting right on top of the blue that I'm going to ultimately touch up, and the green is sitting on top of a green that I'm going to touch up. The problem is they look pretty good color-wise in this photo, but you don't really know how they're going to look until you actually lay them down. So a lot of times what I'll do is I always start at the center of the play field and work outward because, you know, methodologically or systematically, I should say, it's just a better approach because while things are drying in the center, you can work around the edges. Opposed then, if you started on the edges, it's kind of hard to work in the center because then you're smearing everything with your arm. And trust me, you know, you can see all the paint stains on the back on the bottom side of my forearms. You'll understand why I always say work from the center out, not from the out in. So what I'm going to try and do is I'm going to try and make this pool rack look a little better. Now, this is tricky. This particular pool rack is tricky because like the 4, the 7, the 5, the 13, the 12, those all the striped, the 15, you know, they're kind of hard colors to deal with because you've got these lines going through it. Because I'm working on games that are only worth $500, I'm not going to like stress out if I don't have everything perfect. I just want it to look better. I'm not going to clear coat a playfield with those insert lines staring at me like that. So that's pretty dramatic. So I want to try and get a better touch up. Okay, so you know, here I'm working on the whites. I've done the whites. This one is a light parchment white that seems to be matching well. So I got the white thing going here. You know, now here I'm done, and you'll notice, like, look at the 8-ball, the black on the 8-ball, and you notice how the laid-down colors, the acrylics, have a different matte, they have a matte finish to them compared to the gloss around them. And even, like, the blues, like on the 10-ball, you can see the blue where I went around, and the 14, and the 6, and the greens, that they don't look to be a real good match. And it's kind of an optical illusion because the gloss versus the matte kind of messes with your eye and how the light refracts off of it. So a good trick to see how it's going to look once you get clear on it, because once you put clear on it, everything becomes consistent as far as gloss, is after you've let it dry, you just take a little water and you just spread the water over your touch-up area. Now, I know it's water-based paint, but it's not going to take once the stuff dries, it's pretty durable. It's not going to take your paint off. So once, you know, if you let it dry for an hour or something and put a little water on it, you can kind of get an idea of how it's going to look when it has the clear on it. And then you can make decisions based on that. You can see that I've done some kind of wholesale touch up. Like if you look at the number 7 ball, I haven't painted the little black lines through the round circle. You know, I probably should have, but man, there are a lot of little lines there and I'm not quite sure if I could really make it look better. And once again, once you get the clear on it, everything kind of becomes consistent, so your eye isn't so drawn to touch-ups. It's really tough to get past this, but and experience is going to help you. But to me, this was my as best as I could do. I was afraid that drawing the black lines, I wouldn't be able to make them perfectly straight and that they would stick out more. They would make the touch-ups look worse than if I just went with this minimalistic approach. Okay, and so red and yellows. Okay, red and yellows are two difficult colors to touch up, mostly because the pigments in these two colors tend to be fairly translucent, which means when you lay them down, the stuff underneath them likes to bleed through. And it can really wreak havoc with picking the right colors and getting good matches. So one thing that works really well is to take a little white paint and mix it in with your red and your yellows. Okay, not a lot, but just a little, and it'll make the colors more opaque and you'll have less of this translucency issue. And I also find it's just easier to match the colors once you do that. Again, a little practice is going to go a long way, you know, taking, you know, just a piece of clear acrylic or glass and mixing stuff up on it and just playing with it. But you'll get it down and you'll figure out what works for you. And you know, again, you'll get the stable of colors that you can reuse on other play fields of the same manufacturer. Okay, and another thing that's, if you're going to only do one thing on your play field and nothing else, touching up the black key lines is critical. Now, what's a key line? Well, black on a play field is always the last color to go down. And so what happens is you'll notice that all the color separations have a black line between them. Now, why is that? Why don't they just have two colors that butt right up against each other? Well, it's because in the manufacturing process, you could get overlaps on the screens. And then when you get colors that overlap right on the edges where they meet, it can sometimes look a little funky. So they came up with this idea, why don't we separate everything with black lines? You know, and that's what's known as the key line. So if you put that color down last on top of where all the colors come together, you get a much cleaner look. The problem with these black key lines is that they're around all the inserts, and as the inserts age, they either raise or lower, because, and they're usually lower because they're shrinking, and you end up with this like white halo around all the inserts. So you've got to repaint those, and I just use my black acrylic and a small brush, and I go through and I repaint the black, you know, the black key lines. And if you screw up, you know, you can just wipe it off with a damp rag, or if you let it dry and you notice a screw up, you can just take a little X-Acto blade and sometimes just kind of chip off or cut off the areas that you touched up that you don't want in there to make your lines look a little cleaner. Here's another, you know, more key lines. You can really see on that 8, you know, how the black is just, you know, separated totally by that insert. And, you know, touching that up, it's just going to make your playfield look a lot better. Okay, so here's the key lines all done. We're basically ready to clear coat the playfield. Is it perfect? No. I'm looking at that 3 ball in the rack, and I'm going, you know, that don't look so good, but it's better than it was, and it's acceptable. Again, it's a $500 game. I'm not touching up Medieval Madness here. This is just some goofy EM. I just want it to look better, and I think that this is as far as I want to take it. If I was really getting anal, you know, maybe I could spend a little more time matching that red, but there's another trick that I probably should have done on that 3. What I did is a smear technique. So you have this line around the insert, and it's an actual depression in the paint, and you can just like wholesale paint the red on there and then take a rag and wipe it off, and the red will stay in all the low areas. Well, I probably shouldn't have done that. What I should have done is just repainted the whole red around the 3 ball. That way you don't get this difference between the original paint and the touch-up paint. All you have is the one color. You wouldn't even have to be that exact in the red because it would all be consistent. That's the approach I probably should have taken, but, you know, hindsight is always 20/20. And this is, again, part of your learning process. You'd think I would have learned this by now, but it's hard when you do this because there's so many little things that you're looking at. I find another thing, too. When I'm doing playfields, I say to myself, you know, I got a schedule. I'm going to strip the playfield on Friday. Saturday, I'm going to touch it up. Sunday, I'm going to clear coat it. Don't do that. And I'll tell you why. You strip the playfield on Friday, touch it up on Saturday, but Sunday, don't clear coat it. Instead, come back to the playfield and look at it again. You know, have like a night's rest over it, or a good meal, or, you know, your wife come look at it or something. And you walk up to it with a slightly different angle too. You know, instead of looking at it just from the right side, look at it from the left side. And you'll notice a whole bunch of things that you never saw before. And if I had done that here, I would have saw that 3 and said, you know, that was easy to fix. Why don't I just paint the whole thing one color? You know, instead of doing what I did. But, you know, whatever. I'm sorry, question?
Is it all freehanded? Do you ever do like tape lines on the straight parts? And what about Sharpies?
No Sharpies. Sharpies are evil. For one, they're too translucent. For two, they generally smear when clear coat's applied. Not always, but it's kind of a gamble. I don't like Sharpies. I need actual hard paints. Do I use tape lines? I do on like rounded lines, but usually on straight lines, not so much. But it's a good technique. Some people are real good with it. I just don't personally use it much. It's pretty rare. Sometimes like the key lines that go around pop bumpers, you know, you've got this big round circle. I'll use like a compass and draw the circle around, and then I'll tape it off with some pinstriper tape, and then paint the black line around that. That's one way or one thing I do with tape, but that's about the only thing I do with tape. And you've got to have special tape. You've got to have pinstriper tape, which you can buy at auto shops. It's not expensive. It comes in different thicknesses, and usually use the thin stuff because it's easier to make go around corners. But anyways, okay, so now here's a Williams playfield I was doing. This is a Gulfstream from 1972. And I found, once again, Williams use a lot of the same colors. So once you get things figured out, you know, it'll translate to other games that you might potentially be touching up. Now, on this game, they're using these real fluorescent colors. We've got this real fluorescent green. We've got this, like, in the word special. It doesn't show up so much in this picture, but those orange letters that spell out special are really almost fluorescent color. So, you know, I found that these colors work pretty well for touch-up. The purple had faded pretty dramatically. You can see it, like, where the posts were. You can see how much brighter the purple was. So you kind of come to this dilemma. You've got a color that's faded. Do you want to repaint the whole area with, you know, the brighter purple, or just kind of match what you got there? I took a minimalistic approach to this and decided just to match what was there instead of trying to repaint the whole area. And that ended up using those two colors on the right. The one, the Palmer color, the Palmer purple, which is boysenberry, actually matched really well to the unfaded color, but it was too dark to the faded area. So I mixed it with a little bit of the lighter purple, about 50-50, the Wild Orchard by Americana, and I came out with a pretty good match. Not perfect, but it was acceptable to my eye. And again, this game isn't even a $500 game. This is like a $300 game. Why I'm doing this in the first place, I'm not even sure. But all right, so here's the playfield. Yeah, and here's another trick, too. Digital pictures. If you take digital pictures after you do your touch-up, a lot of times things will come out that you wouldn't normally see with your eye. That really, touch-ups that really aren't so good, that maybe you can't see just looking at it with your naked eye, for some reason the way the flash hits it or the digital color, the digital, you know, the red, green, blue reacts, It sometimes it really makes a big difference, and you can really see things that you never saw before. Like, for instance, see the purple around the pop bumpers. You can kind of see a darker purple more towards the flippers and a lighter back. Well, that area is all touched up. Okay, that was all wear. And without the digital camera, I mean, it looked perfect to me. I mean, it looked dead nuts perfect. But with the digital picture, it doesn't look so perfect. So I thought to myself, you know, what am I going to do here? The correct response would have been to repaint all that purple on the upper third of the playfield, all the same color, and then I wouldn't have had to spend, you know, eternity trying to match it. But actually, I left it. I left it like this because after I clear-coated it, and after you get the pop bumper bodies on there, after the Mylar trim rings are on there, all these little things that really stick out when you have a naked playfield kind of go away. I mean, I don't say they go away, but they're a whole lot less noticeable. And again, this is like a $300 game, and to spend an eternity on it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So, you know, I want a decent-looking game, but I don't need it to be, you know, pinball perfection here. The other thing, too, that I do, one of the reasons why I clear-coat a lot of stuff is mostly because it plays a lot better. When these games were brand new, they had a nice lacquer finish on them, and they were fairly consistent and level and even. But as soon as you start getting wear on them, the ball starts dipping, things start changing the play, there's more rolling resistance. Well, once you clear coat, all that stuff kind of goes away, and the game plays a lot nicer. So, you know, I'm not just trying to make the play field look better, I'm trying to make it play better, too. And to spend eternities matching colors doesn't really help the playability factor. Okay, so maybe I'm just, trying to convince myself that I don't need to touch that purple all the way around. You know, it wouldn't have been so bad, except for where it says on bumpers on both the right and left side. Touching up around text is really, really difficult, and it's very, very time-consuming. To do all the other stuff, where it's basically straight and round lines, that's pretty easy. The orange and the green in that beach ball that's around the center pop bumper, that's completely repainted. But you can see it kind of matches the orange where it says spots selected numbers. That's original orange. So that orange actually worked out pretty good, even though it's fairly fluorescent. And the green was really a good match. But the purple, it probably would have needed another step of tweaking. Ball arch wear marks. Now, a lot of people get really, really distressed about these. These don't bother me so much, as long as you can get them clean. The key is clean. Like here, this is a real clean ball arch. And the reason why I know it's clean, because it's white. So what did they clean it with? They cleaned it with Magic Eraser. I went over and over it and scrubbed and scrubbed. There's no artwork behind it. So you can really go to town. You can go nuts with it. There's some guys that'll sand that out. Sanding it out isn't a bad thing. It's actually, if you take a little 220, you can kind of make the groove less pronounced. That's probably a good thing. But there'll be guys that'll take some acrylic light browns and get it to match the brown wood finish around it, paint it on there, and then kind of wipe it off gently, let it dry a few minutes and kind of wipe it off. So they're almost like staining that white mark and trying to blend it in. But my experience is after you throw clear on this, that mark largely goes away. And when I see play fields where I don't see any ball mark, it's kind of like a red flag to me. Like, okay, how can a game be 30 years old and not have any wear there? It kind of freaks me out a little bit. So I tend to be, once again, a minimalist about doing touch-up on this area. I don't think the juice is worth the squeeze to spend a lot of time on it. Okay, so now let's say you have a real extreme touch-up situation. Text. Like, if you have any kind of words on the playfield, matching text by hand is almost nearly impossible. So what I use is just a portable laptop and the scanner, which you see to the right there, that has the right angle on it. And what that is that's an HP 4600 or an HP 4670. And it's a window scanner that you can actually put right on your playfield, and you can scan in the distressed text, bring it into Photoshop, and touch it up. So what I'll do is, say I got a worn area, and the letters in the word special are missing. Well, I can scan. Maybe they use that same text somewhere else on the playfield that's not missing. I could scan in those letters and basically do a cut and paste and rebuild the old letters. Like in 5,000 here, maybe the three zeros were wasted. So all I need is a copy of one good zero, and I can just cut and paste it and rebuild it. Or I can rebuild the five from another five somewhere else on the playfield that used the same text. Because Gottlieb did do that, or all the art companies did that. They tried to stay, use the same font over and over. It was just easier for them to do. So you can scan this stuff in, and then you can print it out on water slide decals. So here's like the bonus ladder on a fast draw and some of the other graphics that have gotten just, obliterated. This playfield was really nasty. Why I spent any time on this one. It was more wear than paint when I started. But anyways, it's good if you can match the background colors. It's really ideal, but it's not always possible, and I'll show you how to deal with that. So do a test print on white paper. Kind of make sure that you got all your colors and all your size constraints right. You can cut them out of a sheet of white paper, lay them on the playfield, make sure everything's sized right. And then when you get it all ready, then you can print it on some either clear water slide paper or on some white water slide paper. Okay. Buy both kinds because there's two different reasons to have either. Like here, you can see the letters were pretty obliterated. Look in the R for four each lit letter on the playfield. It was pretty wiped out, and the special was pretty wiped out. So I definitely needed to do something here. So here I'm laying them down. They're just water slide. You before you slide, slide them though. Before you put them in the water, if you're using an inkjet printer, you got to spray your decals with like some Krylon Crystal Clear, just so, because it's a water based ink that you're putting on this water slide material. And if you put it in water, the ink all runs. So the clear coat kind of prevents it from doing that. Then you just use a toothpick to kind of line it in there. Here's a special. So now this one I printed on clear decal paper, and I put a few words on there to remind myself next time I got to do this. So here I'm putting the word special down, and there on the upper right you can see that the word special actually, it looks decent. And if you make a mistake, or sometimes these water slide decals are really, really thin. And, you know, if you crinkle them in one way or another, sometimes you'll get a crease in the colors. Well, you can actually go with your acrylics and actually touch up the water slide decals. So if you got a little line in the S, you know, you can just take a little black paint and kind of touch it up, you know, so you don't have to put a whole new decal down. And, you know, with a little tweaking, you can make these look pretty good. You know, now here's another issue why you want the background color to match. You can see the blue that's been roughly painted there, and then on the left there's the decal that just went down, and then on the right I just kind of going around it with the blue paint. This obviously needs a little more work before I clear coat it, but you can kind of see this work in progress, trying to go around the water slide decal, trying to get the blue to match better with, you know, with your blue acrylic paint. All right, so now after you have your play field all done, all touched up the way you want it, you'll find that a lot of the inserts are drooped or cupped. This affects the ball play, and it also makes the play field wear because they're lower than the surrounding wood. So, you know, you've got to deal with this some way. Again, because this isn't a real valuable game, I don't want to spend an infinity removing the inserts. Removing inserts is inherently dangerous. For one, you can crack the insert. For two, you can bring up wood from the surrounding area, depending on how well they're glued. For three, it's just going to be a general pain in the ass and a giant time suck. So I don't really want any of those bad things to happen. So what I'll do is I'll level the play field with a level left, right, and back and forth. And then I'll mix up some auto clear, and I'll just kind of drop it right on top of the insert. So the auto clear, once I got it mixed up, it's not like water thin. It's I don't want to say it's goopy, but it's thicker than you might imagine. And you can actually put it right on top of the inserts to kind of compensate for the amount of cupped to it. And then some people, after they do that, will sand them. And my suggestion is you don't do that, because you've got this clear, and in theory it's higher than everything around it. But the problem is if you try and sand it, you're liable to sand off some of the surrounding areas, and then you're doing touch-ups, more touch-ups, and swearing at yourself. So you remember, the enemy of good is better sometimes. Okay, so now I wipe down the playfields with a tack rag. You can buy tack rags at the paint store. They're like a buck each. You know, just buy them and wipe down, you know, to get all the kind of the dust and dirt and whatever junk that is lint that's fallen on your playfield. Get it off. And then I mix up some clear. I'm using inexpensive two-part urethane. This stuff is called Shopline. It's by PPG. It's real generic. It's fairly inexpensive. It's the least expensive clear that you can buy. But it's a good product. I use it on everything, and it's worked really well for me. The smoothie is the key. It's a fisheye eliminator, which basically means if any playfield has any sort of grease or silicone product on it that you didn't get off using like a pre-wash with naphtha or whatever, or in your magic eraser zest, it didn't come off for some reason. When the paint goes down, it'll fisheye, it won't adhere. The clear just won't adhere. So what is smoothie? Does anybody know what smoothie is? It's really interesting how this works. Smoothie is silicone. They figure if you're spraying more silicone than that's already on the play field, you don't get fish eyes, which is really bizarre. That's like saying, I've got cancer, so I'm going to cure my cancer by giving myself more cancer. You know what I mean? It's kind of a bizarre way of thinking, but it works. So I always use smoothie, and it really does add gloss and make everything lay down nice and smooth and level. So highly recommend it. Also, the thing on the right, the bottom right, that's a mask. You'll need to wear some sort of mask if you're using auto clear. This stuff is nasty. You don't want to be breathing it. Eye protection is also highly recommended. Okay, so here's the two play fields after they've just been shot. So we got the golf stream, we've got the hot shots, we're all ready. I usually put anywhere between 3 and 5 wet coats. I don't do any sanding between them. I just spray them. It maybe takes me 30 minutes to spray, you know, maybe 40 minutes to spray 3 to 5 coats. You know, I spray a wet coat, walk away for 5 minutes, come back, spray another wet coat, walk away for 5 minutes. And I have the play fields flat. I don't have them like this. I have them flat. Okay. So they can't run. And I lay the stuff down, and then I go away for 24 hours. Oh yeah, tape everything off. You can see the blue tape on the jet spin and the blue tape in where the light sockets are, or anything that, you know, could get overspray, because overspray gets everywhere. It's nice if you just kind of tape things off. Then after 24 hours, I use a DA sander. This is an electric DA sander I bought at Sears. There's air-powered ones, or there's electric ones. They're not that expensive, maybe $50. I start with 600 grit, and then I go to 12, and then I hand sand with 2,000. And then do this wet, okay? So it's all wet sanding. Now, on hot shots, I made a mistake. I did too much DA sanding. As you can see on the left, I blew through the key lines by DA sanding too much. So what do you do? Well, a smart guy or somebody that really wanted to spend a lot of time would get their black acrylic out, repaint the key lines, then re-clear coat, maybe put two more coats of clear on top of it. And that would really solve the problem. You'd end up with a really level play field because you basically DA sanded it flat and then, you know, put some final coats on top of it. You'd end up with a really nice final product. Me, I didn't do that because, again, I'm working on a $500 game. I've already got way too much time into this thing. So what do? I can't use acrylic paint to touch it up. Acrylic is way too soft, wouldn't last. So instead, I use black lacquer. The original clear coat on these play fields, when they came from the factory, was lacquer. And lacquer lasted 30 years. So I've got a can of black lacquer, and I just kind of touch up those key lines, and I call it good. And, you know, the lacquer will dry hard. You can use tester's enamel, too. Same thing. It'll dry really hard, and you don't really need to clear coat it. So that's, the you know, a choice that I made here. Was it a good choice? Well, actually, it turns out that it was a pretty good choice. It looked good, and so far it's been lasting great. And if it wears around there, I'll put a little more black lacquer on it. But I'm not going to stress over it. Okay, now to rub the play field out, I use these products. This is available from Treasure Cove. There's some other guys that sell it, too. It's not really the best way to rub out a playfield. You really need a genuine, like, DA buffer. That would be the right way to do it. But those are generally a little bit more expensive. Everybody's got a drill. And this kit is, like, I want to say it's $30 or $40. It's not real expensive. And what it is, it's that red arbor that's on the right. And then you can switch it between these different pads. So you use, they give you three different rubbing compounds. 1, 2, and 3. 3 being the most coarse, 1 being the finest. So I always start with 2. 3 is way too coarse. So I start with 2, and I use the yellow foam pad. I put a small little nickel side dollop of the material on the play field, and then I attack it with the drill. I wouldn't use a cordless drill. I would use a corded drill. You get more consistent and higher RPM. It just works better. Then when I'm done, I move my red arbor over to the black pad, and I use the number 1, which is known as swirl remover. I mean, they don't call it that, but that's really what it is. And you can see the gloss that's starting to appear where it says on bumpers on the left. You can start to see some gloss. And then I'll follow up with just a general buffing with the lamb's wool and using no material. This just kind of cleans everything off and kind of gives like a nice little final buff to it. And you can see the gloss, how it looks pretty good. I mean, I don't want this thing to look like a piece of glass. That would be kind of weird for an EM playfield to look like that. But I want it to look, you know, decent. So here we're done. You can see it's got gloss. It's not a sheet of glass. If people walk up to this game and they don't notice that it's been clear coated, then I think I've done my job well. I don't want people, like, I don't know, if you've been to the Chicago Pinball Expo, the guys from HSA show up there. And you look at their play fields, and I swear from like 50 feet away I can tell, oh yeah, that's been touched up and there's a quarter inch of clear coat on it. I don't want that look. Maybe that's good for like diamond play fields, 90s games. But for EMs, it just looks retarded. I want the game to look nice but not like out of place. Okay, so now we got to rebuild the play field. Okay, so we got to start the reassembly. So here I'm putting the metal parts back on. The Gulfstream on the left, can anybody see something a little weird about the Gulfstream on the left? Anybody see anything? Nothing, huh? Okay, well, it's kind of a trick question. If you look where the ball kicker is, right to the ball kicker, there's a switch, a little micro switch. Does anybody know what that's for? It's not stock. Okay, what I've done is I've turned Gulfstream into a multi-ball game. I've actually changed the hard wiring on it so that the left and right eject holes are locks. So you put the ball in the left or in the right side, and then it kicks another ball from the shooter lane or from the eject hole into the shooter lane. And then to get multi-balls, you put the ball in the other hole, and it kicks them both out, and you play multi-ball. It's a rule change, obviously, a hardwire rule change. But it's kind of cool. I do this on EM sometimes, especially stupid, dumb Williams games that really aren't that fun to start with. I shouldn't say that. That's probably not a good thing to say. Gulfstream's actually a pretty good game. But this was kind of an experiment that I was doing to make it into a multi-ball game. Gottlieb's, prior to about 1976, had an oblong hole for the out hole. And what I do is I take just a quarter-inch, you know, hex screw, and I drive it into the side of the hole. So what that does is when the ball falls into that, the ball has to go towards the left side of the oblong shape of the hole. This gives you a much better kick when it kicks the ball out of the out hole and into the shooter lane, because if you don't have that screw there, sometimes the ball will be sitting in the right side of the hole, and you don't get a good clean kick, and the ball just comes back, and it has to do a double kick to kick it to the shooter lane. And Gottlieb eventually figured out that this was the bad thing to do, to have this oblong hole, and they made the hole round instead of oblong in about 1976. So this just fixes this problem. It's just something I do. It's certainly not mandatory, but I just find it helps. It makes the game play a little more consistent. I call up Pinball Resource and buy a bunch of crap. For the top side of the playfield, posts for Gottlieb's, you can buy all new posts. Those Mylar trim rings, I like the adhesive ones. New pop bumper caps, new rod and ring, that's those silver things for the pop bumper. New pop bumper lamp sockets, new pop bumper coil sleeves, new pop bumper skirts, new pop bumper bodies, because they sell them. Why not? They're cheap, too. Coin entrance plastics, kick-out hole plastics. New flipper bushings that go through the playfield, new flipper coils with new coil sleeves, new metal surrounds for inside kickout holes, new Bakelite links and plungers, new flipper bats, all new pop bumper parts. I'm going nuts, but I find that I spend about $100, new lane guides, about $100 per game when I rebuild them in miscellaneous parts. I know this doesn't look like $100 sitting there, but believe it or not, it's damn well close to that. But your game will play a lot better. It will play really a lot better and look a lot better if you do this stuff. Okay, so turn her over for easy access. So what I do is after I'm all done, when I reassemble it, I just kind of flip the playfield over like this. There's one mistake I made here. Before you flip it over, you should have the wood side rails on. Otherwise, you end up scratching your new fresh playfield finish. I think when I took this picture, I was doing this work before I did the clear coat. That's why they're not on. But generally, you want to have those wood side rails on so it protects the playfield when you flip it over. All right, let's look at the pop bumpers. Those are going to need rebuilt. This is the end of stroke switch. One of the blades is broken. So we're going to rebuild that, put in a new leaf switch, a new tungsten contact. You can buy all that stuff from Pinball Resource. New pop bumper parts. You can see how these are worn. That's why we bought all that new stuff. And when you get done, you know, this one's got a new coil too, new coil sleeve, new plunger, new yokes, and a stroke switch. You know, everything's kind of new. Your rod and ring on the top side, new lamp socket. You know, basically you got everything to make the pop bumpers work really well because you want good action when the game plays. Same thing on the slingshots. Well, not the same thing. I just make sure that the switch is adjusted well and that we've got a new coil sleeve inside the coil. Lamp sockets, I always solder them like you've seen here. I hate flickering lamp sockets, so I always do this work. On bonus lamp bars, I do the same thing again. Sand it with sandpaper before you try and solder, otherwise the solder won't stick. This, you know, again, I don't like flickering lights. All right, time for the flippers. We talked about this a little at the Northwest show, but it bears repeating. You can buy a lot of the parts to rebuild flippers, but I think it's a good idea sometimes to not buy them all and kind of rebuild them yourself at least once. I like to do it this way, not because I'm cheap, but just because I like to micromanage things sometimes. So basically, we've got the coil stop with the blue arrow. got an end of stroke switch and a flipper bushing showing with the green arrow. You got the flipper paw with the red arrow, and we're going to kind of deal with all these. So here's the coil stop. You can buy new ones, or you can just file them. I like to file them flat and make sure that there's no mushrooming to them. You can do it by hand. And then I punch out the roll pin that holds the flipper Bakelite to the paw. And then if you're using the same plunger, invariably they are mushroomed at the end, so you can kind of grind the mushroom off. Or you can do it by hand, too. You don't have to use a bench grinder. Or you can buy a new one. Wire brush them to get any burrs off. And then you make a new Bakelite link. Again, this is stuff I'm doing by hand. You could buy all this stuff from Pinball Resource, all kind of done. And it's really dirt cheap. I probably should just be buying it from them. But I've been doing it this way for a long time. So I guess I'm just used to doing it this way. And then drill a hole in the Bakelite, make sure that the roll pin in the plunger moves smoothly across the Bakelite hole. Punch it all back into place, and then put it all back together. And you can see here the little screws. For some reason, Gottlieb liked to use slot head screws. They didn't use Phillips. A little harder to deal with, so go to Sears, get one of these little tools that'll hold good condition slot head screws in place, make it easier to put everything back together. If you loosen the top screw, you can. I'm using a Williams flipper coil here, actually. Since I originally did this part of the presentation, they've come out with these orange dot coils on Pinball Resource. You can actually buy them now. What there is the stock flipper coil is an A5141, and it's like, I want to say it's 2 ohms for the high power side. And then they sell this thing called yellow dots, which is 1 ohm, which kind of sounds like it's twice as strong. It's not, but it's considerably stronger. In some situations, it's too strong. So now they sell something called an orange dot, which is kind of halfway in between the two. It's 1.5 ohms. So it's a nice coil if you don't want to, really make your game too easy. Check the end of stroke switch. You can also adjust where that little blue arrow is, that piece of metal. You can change how much flipper travel you have. So here, you want to line your flippers like the blue arrows across the top, so it comes in a straight line. But along the bottom, you can increase how much V you get in the flipper. And just increase it slightly. You can see on the right, it's kind of stock, and on the left, you got more V. That way, you can more easily cradle the ball. It's kind of cheating, but I don't know. I like doing it. It's hard to explain, but once you've played a game where that's been done, it's like, wow, why did they do this to all my games? So I like to do that. Okay, hey, it's all done. We're all done with our restoration of the top side of the playfield. We've clear coated it. We've rebuilt the mechanisms underneath. It's time to play. So I appreciate you guys sticking through 66 slides of my hell. To watch this stuff. You guys got any questions? Here, let me turn the lights up. Right over here.
Yeah, back on cleaning the playfield, I got a few playfields that have bad ball swirl marks on them.
Right, yeah, bad ball swirl, right.
I use the magic eraser and isopropyl alcohol, and it cleans them up, but I found a number of them, it doesn't take it off. Do you have any tips for any short of repainting playfields?
No, that's the thing with Magic Eraser. What you're doing is varying results from Magic Eraser. Like the ball swirls are actual physical cracks in the lacquer finish from the ball. It's usually you see them in front of the flippers and in front of the slingshots and around the pop bumpers because that's where the ball gets kicked the hardest and the most often. So, a lot of times the Magic Eraser will get the dirt out of those little cracks, but a lot of times it doesn't. It just kind of depends. You get these kind of varying results, which is what you experience. Have I found any solution? No. Magic Eraser has been my best. Do you have a magic solution?
Not a magic one, but I tried Bleach White.
Bleach White.
And Bleach White I take first only because the Magic Eraser, it's abrasive.
Right.
You can only do it once.
Right. Yeah. It's
Bleach White first, and then if there's any residual, I then use the Magic Eraser.
Okay, so you take Bleach White, and how are you applying the Bleach White? You just spraying it on?
No, I spray a little bit on the rag.
Okay.
And then I rub it very gently, and I always check every, 2 seconds.
Right, to make sure you're not taking anything off, yeah.
I was always wondering, though, will Bleach White in the long term, degrade the paint in any way?
The magic thing about Bleach White is it's bleach. Yeah, I mean, that's really what it is. I mean, you've smelled this stuff, right? Yeah, excuse me a sec. So will that have a degradation to the finish? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I've never tried that. I think it's a great idea. I'll tell you what, next time I'll try it. What, you tried the bleach white on his wood rails? Does he know that you did this?
He's the one that told me.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Larry, I'm bleach white in your games. Man, they're going to be so pretty when I'm done. Why? Yeah, yeah. I hope that helps. You know, that's a good suggestion from...
Yeah, I've also seen the Mean Green. In fact, I think you used it on the Jet Spin.
I did use Mean Green on the Jet Spin, but it doesn't take any of the swirl marks out.
I've seen others mention that on RGP that they always use Mean Green instead of the alcohol, but it doesn't seem... I haven't found...
Yeah, I haven't seen any difference with Mean Green. The reason why alcohol is good is because you don't want to raise the grain of the finish. And anything that's water-based, that's real liquidy... will raise the grain if it gets under there. So what happens is say you've got a playfield with some light wear and you're using Magic Eraser with water or Mean Green, which has got a large component of water in it, the wood will actually expand and raise the grain, and it'll actually cause the paint to kind of buckle up, which you don't want because it'll make it flake more. So the reason why alcohol is good is alcohol doesn't cause the grain to raise. And that's why a lot of people say to use the highest percentage alcohol you can find. I just find that anything 70% above is going to work well. But if you're a cautious person would use 90 or 95 or 99%, especially on a worn play field. Question in the back. Yes?
If you have a kick-out hole where the black key line is completely obliterated, what's your technique to replace that?
Again, I've got this kind of like a compass that it's really neat. It's like, it looks like a round pizza pie with a bunch of holes in it. And you set it in the center, and then depending where you put your pencil, I just use a pencil, it does a spin around. So you kind of put it dead center in the hole, and then you can kind of redraw it with the pencil. And then you can make sure that everything's aligned with your pencil. And then once it's all aligned, then I repaint it using black acrylic. And you can do it one or two ways. If you're good, you can do it by hand. If you're not so good, you can tape it off using the tape that I mentioned before, made by 3M. That's the for the line, for the guys that use the lining on the cars.
You can do it by hand. I mean, you're going to go outside those lines. It's not going to look perfectly smooth like it does from the factory. How do you account for that?
Well, again, I'll tape it off with the pinstriper tape. I'll paint the black, then I'll let it dry. I'll take the key line or the tape off, and then I'll take a little X-Acto, and anywhere where it's, you see an imperfection, you can kind of, with the tip of the X-Acto, kind of take it off, and you can smooth a lot of that stuff out. Sometimes you can only do just the outside, and then I'll do the best I can to control the line on the inside, and then again I'll take an X-Acto and kind of go around and kind of clean it up. It's not easy work, but I've done it before. Yes, sir, on the way back. No, I use those. The problem is that people can't get them. I seem to be the only guy on the planet to have these. What he's talking about is, I don't remember where, but I posted to maybe an EM group that I was doing, having a lot of problems with, like what this gentleman was talking about, doing black key lines. And a guy said, hey, I'll make you a set of dies that are the approximate size of a lot of the key lines. Because a lot of the key lines, the diameter circles are pretty consistent from game to game because they use the same size inserts. So this guy, he sent me these dies, and they're great. I can you put them on. He sent me a little rubber pad, and I get some green, very thin masking tape at the paint store. And I put the die on it, and I hit it with a hammer, and it cuts out a perfect circle. And then I can lay the circle right down over the insert. And then I can do another circle that's slightly bigger and take the center of the circle out, and I've got the outside and lay that down, and I've got these perfect key lines that I can paint using these dies. But I don't tell people a lot about these because the guy totally disappeared. I don't know what happened to him. He doesn't respond to emails anymore. He made this one set for me, and I don't think anybody else has them. So, yeah, Vinny was his name. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you. I think you got a lot of people asking me. You didn't want to deal with it. Yes, sir.
And have you seen the insert stencils at the Geist Mustro you had on their table with the low tack?
No, I have not. What?
They're going to do a bunch of them, all different sizes and stuff.
Oh, really? Are they there now? Can you buy them?
They had them there yesterday.
They did. Okay, I'll check it out.
I have a question about getting the yellow off the cabinet. I've done the mean green approach.
Mm-hmm.
What I find though happens is that if you use enough mean green, and it's like the paint softens or something.
Yeah, especially the reds. Yeah.
And, blues too. And what? Is it just you can only do it so much?
Yeah, you can only get so far. You gotta. The enemy of good is better. Sometimes you just got to use one or two wipings with mean green. Or I've been using this LA's Totally Awesome, which is kind of like a step stronger than mean green. But it's the same caution. You can do it once, maybe twice, but you kind of got to stop. And it's diminishing results every time. Like the first time you do it, the black or the soot or the brown or the nicotine or whatever you want to call it just comes streaming off. And then you're like, wow, I can do this one more time. It should take it all off and it'll be, bone white, but it's not. I think, you can only take it so far, short of repainting the cabinet.
So you haven't found another technique?
No.
It looks a little blotchy with the yellow.
Yeah. Yeah. It sure can. Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I usually just do it once or twice and just stop myself. That's the whole thing. Yes, sir.
I guess kind of late, so forgive me if you covered this in the slides, but when you get ready to pre-coat the play field, you take everything off, all the posts and whatnot, and get those little volcanoes where the screws go in.
Right. I have a little piece of acrylic block that's like 3 inches thick, and it's maybe, not 3 inches thick, it's about 3/4 inches thick, and it's maybe 3 inches square. And I put that on top of it, and then I hit it with a hammer. And I pound them down. Now, it's not going to totally compress them, but it does bring them down because what happens is, like you said, anywhere a screw went through the play field that holds a post, as the screw tightens, the wood kind of pulls up. And, like you said, you get this kind of this molehill. And the problem is like when you DA sand, those are higher than everything else. And, you kind of knock through, your clear coat gets thinner over those. Not that that's bad, but it looks funky. And you're right. It's a good thing to do to just kind of take this acrylic block and a hammer. And I'm not even using a rubber mallet. I'm using a hammer. And I'm just, good solid hit. And then I go to the next one, good solid hit. I don't beat the crap out of it, but I give it a good solid hit. And it knocks them down a little bit. So.
Now, why do you do the rubbing compound after the clear coat? Because sometimes, when I turn it on, I'm like, it looks pretty good. I'm just going to wax it.
You can. I'm not as good at clear coating as you, or maybe I don't have as good equipment. I get imperfections. And also, if you're not sanding between coats, you're never going to be able to do what you're doing. I suspect you're sanding between coats. Yeah, you see, if you're sanding between coats, you can get away with it. I'm not doing that. I'm laying down all the coats in one sitting. Okay, I'm laying down 3 to 5 coats all at once. And so there's no sanding between any of them, and it's going to require something. Now, if I did all that, lay down my 3 or 5, let it dry, DA sanded it, and then put down another coat or two. Yeah, I've done that before where I also, it's good to go. I mean, it looks great, and you don't have to deal with it. But, then it's another step. So, yes, sir.
You said DA sanded. What's DA?
DA stands for dual action. So, it kind of goes in an oblong direction, almost like a figure eight. It's kind of a generic term that's been used in the auto industry. I mean, any body shop guy, when you say a DA sander, they immediately know what you're talking about. I kind of assumed that everybody knew that, but it's probably not the good thing to assume. It's different than like an orbital sander. Traditionally they were pneumatic. But they make electric ones now, so I have an electric one. But they're not that expensive. They're good to have. They're better than an orbital sander. Yes, sir.
After you're done with the clear coat, did you do anything with cure the play field? Yeah. Like I know Tim up in Seattle, he has a turn tank with lights and right temperature and space.
No, I don't do that. You can do that. The drying time goes down dramatically. That's what auto body shops do. They use like a UV light or forced warm air on it. I think if you put 150 degree temperature air across the play field or across whatever you're painting for 30 minutes, it increases it's like the equivalent of waiting 24 hours. I don't do any of those things. I just don't have that set up. It just would take up more room, more energy, more time, more money. So I don't do it that way. I just wait 24 hours.
He needs a brush out
of the wax. He's got a jet while he's brush out. He's got to turn the tank up into his bench with lights.
Yeah, I just don't do that. Yeah, and some people do touch up like that. I saw a guy recently that he does spot clear coating. Like, he touches up a play field like that pool rack that was in the center. He does that, and then he'll mask off the pool rack with low-tack tape, and then he'll take, like, a wipe-on Minwax and just wipe on some clear and then let it dry and then take a little Novus 2 and polish the whole thing. And it actually looks pretty good, and it's a lot easier than, you know, tearing the whole play field down and spraying the whole thing. And that's what he does. So, you know, there's more than one way to skin the cat, as they say. So, you know, a lot of different people get good results from different techniques. This is just what works for me. So, you know, and nothing more than that. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm just curious, because in one of your Top Cat videos, you had advocated for rotisseries, which I found one on eBay and thought it'd be really good. Do you not use rotisseries when you're working on a play field anymore?
I usually work on the game, the play field inside the game. And when I get done and I need the bottom side, I just flip the play field up and turn it over. To me, it's just easier than a rotisserie. The problem with rotisseries is they take a fair amount of space. And I just don't have the space to dedicate to it. I mean, I have one. I just don't use it that much. If I was doing like a play field swap, yeah, then the real nice to have. But when I'm doing this kind of work, nah, I just don't find them necessary. It would just complicate my life. So, yes.
Clay, when you have play fields that you actually can see in little cracks or...
Right, the planking, yeah.
What do you do for that?
I touch them up. No, I don't sand them at all. What I'll do is a lot of times I use the smear technique where you overpaint it, and then you take a rag and kind of wipe it off, and the color stays in the crack. And then in the process of clear coating it, you get enough clear on it, it kind of builds up, it'll fill that line, and it ends up kind of, it's like, I don't want to say self-healing, but it ends up going away. It works pretty well. I don't do anything more than that. That seems to work well for me. So, any other questions? All right, great. Hey, thanks for coming, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.